Thank you, Andrea. Let's call this meeting to order. First, can I get a motion for approval of minutes from December 11th, 2024? One by Alder Phil. Get a second motion. Vice President. in favor? Anybody disagree?
Let's take a roll call here.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's okay.
Moving too fast.
That's go great. Ahead. Lost on the agenda. Carradine, excuse me. Folks are still trying to get in here, sorry. Carradine is absent. Cha is excused. Chambers?
Present.
Chambers is present. Duncan?
Present.
Duncan is present. Field?
Present.
Field is present. Waishwell? Waishwell, I see your hand. Waishwell is present. Knox? Knox is not present, although he said he would be. So hopefully he'll be able to join us. And Milton?
Present.
Milton is present. All right.
Thank you, Andrea. May the notes reflect that. And moving along, approval of the minutes from December.
Chambers, is that okay still?
Can you repeat that?
I have Field and Chambers first and seconding the minutes. We did that right before we did the roll call, sorry.
Okay. Seeing that has been approved, we'll go to disclosures and recusals. Anybody have any at this time? Seeing none, can we please go to early public comment? Andrea, who do we have online for that?
One registered speaker. And now I'm going to not be able to find this person. Hang on a second. Here we go. Sloan Martin to speak on item number 3, the report from the Madison Police Department. And Sloan keeps popping in and out. So let me see if we can get Sloan in here. Sloan, are you set to speak?
I'm here to make a public comment, yes.
You have 3 minutes if you'd like to speak.
Thank you. I'm here as a resident of Madison just to make a comment about Act 253. And I just urge the Public Safety Committee to set really careful restrictions on the sorts of fines that we can levy on folks who are requesting public records, including body cam footage, to avoid kind of dampening the public's ability to access that footage. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrea, do we have somebody else? I thought I saw somebody with their hand raised.
I don't see the hand. Oh, here we go. Scott Gordon, although not registered to speak.
My apologies. I thought that I had registered to speak online, but perhaps I did something wrong there.
I see you on the watch list. Yep. Okay.
Okay. Sorry about that. Do you mind if I say something?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Thank you. I also wanted to speak to the agenda item dealing with redaction fees. And basically, I've been a journalist since 2006. I live in District 12. I'm the publisher of a local media outlet called Tone Madison. I know it's a bit unusual for a journalist to speak during public comment at city meetings, but I think this item should concern anyone who cares about transparency in government. I urge this body to support Alder Govindarajan's substitute amendment and leave the city's prohibition on redaction fees intact. I've been writing and reporting on Act 253 for much of the last year. That's the state law that gives police agencies the option to charge redaction fees for audio and video. The law creates new cost barriers to public records access, but it also includes a punitive provision that is essentially unheard of anywhere in open records law. Basically, if you ask for a fee exemption and the agency deems that you've done so under false pretenses, you can get fined up to 10, you can get fined $10,000. Additionally, Act 253 is vaguely worded. When a law is vaguely worded that invites abuse, it also invites litigation. At some point, the courts will need to step in and provide some clarity. And I think that will be costly for for whichever government agency ends up trying to defend it. Yeah, no one who exercises their right to file a records request should ever be threatened with the possibility of a punitive fine. And that's what happened to a colleague of mine last year when she filed an open records request with the UW-Madison Police Department, which I know is not under your jurisdiction. But the point is, they're already taking advantage of Act 253. And my question is, would anyone on this committee ever want someone to have that kind of experience when filing a records request with the city of Madison? And I would really hope not. When I filed records requests with the city, I found record staff to be professional and courteous, and it would be a disservice to ask them to inflict this law upon members of our community. And frankly, I'm less concerned about how this impacts journalists and more concerned about how it impacts members of the public who don't have a lot of experience filing open records requests. I think governments should be making that process less intimidating, not more. Police around the country have spent hundreds of millions of state, local, and federal tax dollars on body cameras. The fact that they are suddenly pleading poverty when it comes to open records requests for body camera footage is very suspect. If MPD wants to adopt body cameras in the long run, we need to find a better way of handling these costs, one that doesn't create new barriers to public access. Yeah, in conclusion, the people in the state legislature who crafted Act 253 did a very poor job. The PSRC and the Common Council have an opportunity to do better. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Andrea, do we have anybody else for public speak?
No one is registered.
All right, seeing that, we will go right into the police reports. And who is here to represent? I believe Kelly Beckett is here for the police department.
I am. Good evening, everyone. I'm just going to go over the notes that were sent out that should have been attached to your agenda earlier this week. We, of course, had some significant incidents in December, a few days after our meeting, in fact, when we had the Abundant Life Christian School shooting, which occurred on December 16th. And there was a robust response, of course, from police, fire, MPD police and fire, and then a host of other agencies who came in. And that really obviously was a traumatic experience for the city, for the Abundant Life, for the community, and for police and fire departments. And so that was a hard way to end the year. And so that is still an ongoing investigation with our federal partners, I believe. And then in January, we had the unexpected loss of a detective in our department, which left many of us very sad and upset. And so we had a funeral for him, which was a wonderful, again, outpouring of support from community and the fire department and other police agencies. So we're grateful for that and grateful for that support. Otherwise, we've had no homicides and no fatal crashes, which is wonderful to report out over the last 2 months, and hopefully that trend continues. Our strategic plan continues to evolve. We have published phase two results. They've been added to our website, so I encourage you to go take a look at that. And our next steps are we're working on phase three implementation of our next action items. And so I'll have another report on that in a couple of when we next meet. It's moving along very well. And again, you can view that all on our website. As most of you are probably aware, we did have a chief of police departure at the end of January, and we are moving forward with Acting Chief John Patterson, who is an assistant chief, who was an assistant chief and is now in the acting status. So we look forward to working with him and going through the process of finding a new police chief. And so that's the transition is going well. And just a couple of other operational updates. Our patrol shift change occurred on February 2nd, so officers are getting used to their new beats, new districts, and so you might see some new faces out and about if you haven't noticed certain officers. We all switch on February 2nd, so and then our recruits are out solo as well. They started with the shift change. We do have an accelerated academy and a pre-service academy scheduled to start in May of 2025. We're looking forward to that. And otherwise, no promotions since our last meeting. And that's about it from the police department. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Do we have any questions, comments? All to Derek.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the update. I was wondering if we have any information yet about the timelines for the search for the new permanent police chief, if that or when we can expect more information about those timelines and process.
That is a fantastic question that we are all asking. I don't know. I believe that'll come from the Police and Fire Commission at some point. They'll lay the groundwork for that, and so we are all waiting on those updates as well. So I'm sorry, Alderfield, I don't have any updates right now. I think it's still relatively new, and I'm not sure when their next meeting is, but I'm sure they're going to start talking about it immediately.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Lynn, you have a question?
Yes, and I apologize for not getting these on the agenda earlier. I wanted to know if the department has federally funded DEI initiatives and or if they have DEI initiatives that are funded locally, and what is the read on that if you do?
That's an excellent question. I do not know.
How would I find, can you comment on how I would find out about that?
Sure, I could do some research on it. If I had known, I would have done research on it
Yeah, I'm
before.
sorry. I wanted to put these out there in case,
Yeah.
it's,
Yeah, our funding is not exactly in my wheelhouse. We have a budget department that and a finance department that handles that. So that would be a specific question I would have to ask them before I could comment any further on that. As to in terms of federal grants, we do have federal grants that we utilize, but to speak on them with any certainty, I'd have to research that item a
yeah,
little
and I
bit further.
apologize. I should have gotten it in earlier because I
No,
was,
that's okay. But I'm happy to look into that.
yeah, and the other is related, and that is, is there federal money from the Department of Madison Police Department to work with ICE, and or is there a policy statement about how police is going to interact with ICE in the event that they are here?
Yeah, I mean, we have a standard operating procedure that we follow. It's actually readily available on our website. It's also there's also a section of our code of conduct that's dedicated specifically to enforcement of immigration laws. One of the things I think that is paramount, I think, when we talk about issues such as this, is that the Madison Police Department serves everyone, regardless of their immigration status. There are times per our standard operating procedure when we will cooperate with a lawful request from ICE. And I can go over those if you're interested. Basically, there are four circumstances. The first is that the individual is engaged or in or is suspected of terrorism or espionage. The second is that the individual is reasonably suspected of participating in a criminal street gang. The third is that they are arrested for a violent felony. And the fourth is that they are a previously deported felon under circumstances for which there is an independent basis for officers to detain or arrest the individual. Those are the four circumstances that we will cooperate with a, again, lawful request from ICE. Our policy is very clear that we continue to serve all citizens, all people in the city that need our help and that ask. So that's where we're coming from, and that's what we're pushing going forward until told otherwise. And that's, we've been operating in that capacity for years and we'll continue to do so.
And I don't know if you can answer this, but has there been any requests from ICE thus far?
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah. Okay. And then, all right. And the last is just a comment, you know, reading the notes over. I know the data, the most recent data to look at the pattern of arrests and this and that is second quarter of 2024. And although you provide a quick update, but I mean, is that the most current data that is possible, or how would you address that?
Yeah, I asked about that actually, because I was curious. I think we're just in this weird period where we're going to be posting the next quarter's data within the next 2 weeks. I think there's just a lag in terms of compiling those statistics and having them fully vetted so that they can be released. But I spoke with someone earlier this week because I wanted to see if I could share that, and it's not ready yet. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, they'll post something to our website.
Okay. Well, it's just a comment because it's, you know, unfortunately a year ago is a year ago, and we have processes for verification. So I understand that.
Sure.
It's nice to look at something more current if possible.
I totally agree. I don't operate in that area, but I do agree. It would be nice to, I think that's why we try to send out public summaries so that of the months, so that we can at least gain a snapshot in that capacity of what's happening in our city.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Are there any other further questions for Kelly? Seeing none, we will move to the item number 4, the fire reports. I believe we have Assistant Chief Larson on the line.
Yes, sir. Good evening. Mine will be relatively brief tonight. Again, as Captain Beckett referenced to, we did have the Abundant Life event that was a significant impact on our department, Madison Police, and many others, especially the community. So we're still working through some operational programs with that to go ahead and assess that and take a look at what our response was, any improvements and that kind of stuff that we can do within our department, along with working many of the other agencies that were there. So that will be a long-term process for us. Recruit-wise, we currently still have our 30 recruits about a third of our way through our program. They'll be transitioning into some fire training here in approximately 2 weeks, again, with the end goal of getting them out on June 6th to serve in the field. Promotions-wise, we had four personnel recently promoted to lieutenant, so they are out in the field serving in that capacity. Then just kind of a final quick update on CARES. We did our expansion into Sun Prairie as part of the mutual agreement with them. That's only been going about a week. So I really, any update on that with, you know, responses for needs of CARES is going to be way too early to provide any of that. We're currently working through with our data analyst to get all completed calls and information from 2024 into one document. So that one, unfortunately, is taking just a little bit of time due to his workload. And we'll also be able to provide all the response data for the fire side for 2024 as well when that's compiled. That is really what I have from the fire side. Nothing big.
Any questions or comment for Assistant Chief Larson? I just want to say, as a La Follette staff, thank you for your services. As you know, the Abundant Life is not too far from La Follette, and we were on lockdown for a while. So some of my I can't say my, some of the staff here didn't understand why, but I will say thank you for the very strong precautionary measures, because I know that was a very tense situation. So thank you for your time, both of you, both of your organizations. I see Lynn has a comment or a question. Can't hear you, Lynn.
There we go. sorry. And actually, it's just one of the questions I just asked previously was, if not a question, a concern, is DEI initiatives within the fire department, and if you have federal funding for those initiatives. And I mean, I'll put this on the agenda for next time, but are there federal funding for DEI initiatives? And is there any talk about, if so, what's the plan if those are taken away?
Yeah, and again, I apologize for not having a 100% sure on that answer, but speaking with Chief Carbon just a little bit the other day, I do not believe fire gets any federal funding for DEI, but please don't take that as complete, because I can't. But as we talked through this when that came out, we're pretty sure fire does not fall under that with any federal funding for that. But I'll have to get back to you on that.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I should have asked the question earlier in the agenda to be prepared. But
all good. All good.
Thank you.
Any further questions for the fire department? Seeing none, we will move over to new business and item number 5, of which I know Matt Haas, I believe, is he on, or he said he was going to be on. Andrea, do you know if he's here?
Yes, I am, Chair.
So, number 5, amending section 3.70 of the Madison Journal ordinances related to public records to align with current technology, city practices, and state law. I'm going to turn it over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. For any of the newer members, I'm not sure if we've all met. My name is Mike Haas. I'm the Madison City Attorney. Before we jump into this item, I can just, maybe provide a little bit more information in response to the questions about DEI initiatives. Our office is working with all city agencies to review programs and policies in light of what's been coming out of the federal government to make sure we're in compliance following the litigation, of which you probably know there is a lot of, to challenge some of the policies and executive orders and directives. So far, we have not found any city programs that we think are problematic, but that's something we're working with all of the agencies on. Maybe at a future meeting, we'll be further down the road and see how things shake out. But I thought I would at least share that with you, that all the city agencies are working on that and paying attention to it. With this item, this is an ordinance that was referred to this committee by the city council, an ordinance amendment, and this committee's review of it is not as, relevant or vital as it was with the initial proposed ordinance, which was sponsored by the mayor. So I just want to explain why it was referred to you and what this is. This is an ordinance that really updates our processes, our city processes for responding to public records requests, which of course there's a state law that governs that. We have some sort of internal procedures at the city so that city employees and staff know what the process is and know what the rules are and who are the people responsible for the policies and people responsible for responding to public records requests. Most of what is left in front of you, this is a substitute, meaning it is a it is different from what was originally proposed. And so the substitute outlines mainly technical changes and changes to our ordinance to make it consistent with what the existing practice is. So I don't think there's really a lot in substance here to review. There's updates on, you know, just some of the use of pronouns and titles for different staff that are involved and different technical procedures. The reason it was originally referred to this committee is because this ordinance proposal would have allowed the city agencies to charge the cost of redacting any audio and video records that are requested. And of course, the police department is probably the main agency that would be affected by this, with dash cam and body cam video. And the previous state statute did not allow the department to charge for the cost of redacting. And there is a change to state law last year that now allows agencies to cost for the charge of redacting either audio or video records before they are released in response to public records requests. And there are a number of reasons why audio or video may need to be redacted to, for instance, not identify juveniles, witnesses, other protected information that we would not release if it was in, for instance, a police report on paper. And the reason this became an issue is because it's very time consuming for the staff of the police department, the public records staff, to redact that information. Unlike just reading through a document, you cannot necessarily speed up audio and video. You can speed up video to a certain extent, but people viewing it have to be able to see enough of the video to recognize information that would have to be redacted. If you have a 2-hour police interaction, that entire video has to be viewed, and you can only speed it up to a certain extent. The other factor that has been, developing in recent years is the number of requests that we get for police video. And this is not only coming from the parties or what you would consider to be kind of normal media, but there's been a vast increase in the number of requests that the police department gets from overseas people, people on YouTube that just want to post video to get clicks, basically, or, to run on, sort of these, you used to have the cops TV shows. Well, now they're all over YouTube, and people hunting for video from all over the world. And oftentimes what we would see is the staff would go through all the trouble of redacting the video, and then the requester would not pay for it, and so they would not get the video. And it was a big waste of time. And so the state legislature recognized this issue and allowed local law enforcement to charge for that cost of redacting. We can still charge for the cost of locating records. That's under the existing and statute. It's been that way for a long time. But locating costs do not include the time it takes to redact. So that was the issue that brought this to the PSRC. I wanted to let you know that, but also tell you that now has been taken out of this proposed ordinance after receiving some input and reactions from different parties and I think certain segments of the media. The mayor's decided for the time being to take that piece out of the ordinance. And you will see, if you look in the substitute, you really would not even, it's not really plainly stated because it's only a reference to a statute in section, subsection 4A, 4A1. There's a section that, or language that said, except as provided in Wisconsin statute 9.35, and then there's some subsection references. That's the statute that would have allowed us to charge for redacting audio and video. And so this ordinance would have permitted that those charges. That's now been taken out. So the version that is in front of you is a substitute, and all that is left really is these, as I said, kind of technical changes and changes to update the ordinance to make it consistent with our current processes. So hopefully that makes sense. I'm happy to take any questions, but I, unless there's questions, I don't really see much value in going through like these minor wording changes unless the committee would like to.
A hand up from Julia, I'm sorry.
Hello, yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, so Mr. Haas, I have a question relating to your statement just now that there's been vast increases in the number of records requests that have been made. Can you comment on how the historical trends in number of requests has changed over, I don't know, the past couple years? And do you have any examples of these individuals who are making requests from overseas and posting these sorts of things from Madison body cams, et cetera, on the internet?
To answer your last question, I'm not sure exactly. You know, because these requests can be made by email and anonymously, and we're not allowed to ask the reasons that they want the records, we don't really know what happens with them after we release the records. So, you know, there's nobody tracking necessarily where our video might show up around the world. And we don't even necessarily know that an individual email address is from a source that's going to end up, you know, in some foreign individual's hands. We can't really tell that always. As far as the data, I'm sure the public records staff could provide that data. They track the number of requests. And maybe if that's something the committee wants to ask the department for, they could provide it at the next meeting. I was told at one point that our police department was receiving more records requests than the city of Milwaukee police department. And which, you know, just based on population would be a little bit surprising. But I don't know what the numbers are. I know the police department, I see Dr. Hunt is on the line here, and he supervises that staff. They would have to provide you with that data.
All right. Thank you. I see Alder Knox has his hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Attorney Haas, I just wanted to make sure this is different than, say, if the police department had a case and it went to the DA's office, and you know how people are kind of requesting to see the video. Is this different than a scenario like that, or is this, does this apply equally to those situations?
Well, this applies to public records requests, so it would not apply to like requests from the district attorney's office or from our office or a city agency. But if the police department provides video to the district attorney's office and it's in the DA's custody, they use it for prosecution. I don't know if they might use it to show to victims, but whatever their purposes are, they would not be charged for the records.
But they could request that record, that video, correct?
Somebody from the public could request it from either our office or the DA's office. And then, they would be charged for the records in either case.
All right.
It's just, this would have only affected how much they could have been charged.
Yeah. So maybe this is a question for the police representative, but oftentimes we see there's this limbo period where, the public wants to see the video and, maybe the department is saying, well, pending, the investigation. So, how we have that kind of doesn't seem to be a clear cut when we'll release the video to the public or not. Can either one of you comment on that a little bit?
Well, I could start. I mean, you're correct that that's a different situation. That's if the police department is releasing the video itself.
Okay.
And as you know, I'm sure, the police department will not typically release records while there's a pending investigation. And you hear that a lot. And a lot of times I think people don't necessarily realize, what all has to be done to wrap up an investigation before the police department feels like it is appropriate to release either police reports or camera video. And I think the reason why it's, unpredictable and not set is it varies from case to case. How many people do you have involved? Is all the evidence been collected? Are they still tracking down leads? Do they not want to release information because it could be helpful to potential suspects and they're trying to verify things independently? Sometimes you have people calling in claiming to be involved based on information that's been released, and that information turns out to be false. So there's a number of reasons that they do have to wait to release it and why we can't really predict if it's going to be done quickly or after months of time.
So the standard response in that case is they will not release information pending an investigation. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, right. While an investigation is pending, correct.
And usually it may even be another department doing that investigation, correct?
It could be, it's a good point, Alder, especially when there's an officer involved shooting, and then that has to be investigated by a different law enforcement agency. And then in that case, it's not even the police department that has the say about when things can be released.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other questions? Comments? Okay, so Julia, your hand went up first.
Yeah, sorry, I just had I got muted.
Julie, hang on a second. Correct me if I'm wrong. Either Karen or Alder Haas, but this is time for the committee to ask questions. Are we allowing members of the public to ask questions at this time?
If that question was for me, typically no, but the committee can set its own rules, but typically the public's involvement is in providing public comments, it's up to the committee whether it wants to allow any other either questions or include members of the public in the discussion.
Thanks for that.
I would say if the committee is going to do that, it would need to open it up to all members of the public.
So hearing that, then I think we should probably just stay in line with what we've been doing and keep it to the committee. Any thoughts? I know, Lynn, you had your hand up too. I hear you, Lynn.
I just wanted to make sure I understood. So right now, there will be no increase in fees for the public to request the video. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And can you tell me what those fees are? I don't know what they are. Is it expensive or I don't know?
Well, it depends. Our favorite answer, it depends, because it is supposed to be based on the salary of the lowest paid employee that is able to do the work, right? So we don't charge people the salary of the police chief. It's the staff who is working on locating the video or the audio. Right now, we can only charge for, you know, that time. So that may be hours of time, and you multiply that by the hourly rate of the employees involved. You know, the actual cost of the records, whether it's paper documents or audio and video, is typically not large compared to the cost of the time. So it just depends on how long it takes them to go through and locate the video.
Thank you. And then just, is it, if I understand you right, the increase was going to be because of, so to speak, the failure rate, meaning they would do the work and then somebody wouldn't pay, you know? So if I'm correct, can verify that that's my understanding is correct. And that I would just be curious to know what proportion of people who request in that manner actually are deadbeats and don't pay. And all the work is not, the work is done, but not paid for.
Yeah. Again, I'm not sure what the data would show on that. And I'm not sure I understood your other question, the increase being, you mentioned the increase.
Right. I was verified that there's not going to be an increase, right?
Right. But then you talked about what I thought there was another piece of that about what the increase would be, but maybe I misunderstood.
Well, it's not happening now, right?
So right.
But I was just curious, you know, what proportion of, because it sounds like it's a real energy waster if people, hopefully they know the cost before they choose to have it done and that they follow through. But my understanding from you is that it is a time suck, and it's also not effective because people end up not purchasing the work.
Right. And you know, we can charge, if the cost is going to be more than $50, we can require a prepayment before the records are located, but it even takes work to figure out what that estimate would be as well. And you know, nowadays the lines are so blurry about people who like to call themselves media, and they like to portray themselves as media if they have a blog or can post things on the internet. So people are constantly claiming they're the media and therefore they should not be charged, but the media is charged generally for public records.
Thank you.
And so I think I've said this, but this ordinance, you know, without that provision about the cost for redacting, this ordinance probably would not have been referred to this committee to take up your time. But since it was, I wanted to explain, you know, why it was and what the issue was. It may potentially come back at a future date if either the mayor or Alders are interested in revisiting this issue.
Ernie Haas, do we have any other questions or comments regarding item number 5? Seeing none, can I get a motion on the floor? Alder Derrick, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I'll move the committee recommend approval of the substitute.
Do we have a second and a third? All in favor? Anybody disagree? Seeing none, Andrea, can you reflect to the notes that item number 5 has been approved?
So
number 6. Oh. Go ahead, Andrea.
Nope, I'm sorry, I said so done. Thank you.
Item number 6, establishing a glass-free zone for the Mifflin area from 6 a.m. on April 26, 2025 to 6 a.m. on April 27, 2025, District 4. Open for discussion. Any thoughts, questions, comments, concerns? My memory serves me correct. This has been like an annual item. Seeing no comments, questions, thoughts, can I get a motion on the floor? Vice President?
Motion to approve.
Thank you, sir. Can we get a second? Alder Derrick? Anyone disagree? Someone all in favor? You? Andrea, can you reflect to the notes that all are in favor of item number 6?
Done.
Thank you. Moving on to item number 7, I believe we have some guests online regarding the BCC streamlining project discussion. Who is here to discuss that?
Hi there. There are two of us here, and I can introduce myself quickly, and I may share slides. My name's Christy Baumel. I work in the mayor's office. Can you hear me okay, first of all?
Yes.
Okay. My name's Christy Baumel. I work in the mayor's office, and I'm here with Karen Kapusta-Pofal from the Common Council office, and we are jointly supporting a project to look across all of the city's boards, commissions, and committees. That's what BCC stands for. Recognizing for reasons that we will go into, we're looking to shrink the size of the entire system and make some changes. A memo was sent out in December to this effect, and we had asked to get on the agenda to discuss this, and so we're here to discuss this now. So we have some slides to just add a little context before opening up a discussion. And if I can share my slides, it looks like I can. And I will put this in. Slideshow from beginning. And I'll advance those if Karen, feel free to take it away.
Wonderful, thank you. I'll give everyone a bit of a history and context and then hand it back over to Deputy Mayor Baumel for next steps and discussion questions. Next slide. So the BCC streamlining project is, as Deputy Mayor Baumel just mentioned, is a project to reduce the size of the BCC system in order to achieve some goals: effective and efficient operations, strong accountable committees, clarity for residents on the legislative process, and balancing committee engagement with other kinds of community engagement. Next slide. This topic has been has been studied and discussed and a project for quite a while. The Task Force on Government Structure, which you may have heard of as TFOGS, began in 2017, looking at this issue as well as a number of other issues in government structure, and made some recommendations about which in short related to fewer BCCs as well as renovations of the structure
They pat once they finished into their final report, an Alder work group was created, the TFOGS implementation work group, and they then did some more analysis and made another, and also recommended looking, figuring out if there was a way we could reduce the size. When they finished their work, they handed the task over to the Common Council Executive Committee, that's CCEC. And Christy and I have been working with CCEC since 2023 to continue analysis and make some specific changes. Next slide. So TFOGS found a number of things, but this is the sort of scope of the things that they recognize. Now, remember, they wrote their final report in 2019. We then had the pandemic and the advent of the virtual committee options. They didn't quite look at that in the same way. Next slide. One of the reasons that the reduction of the number of committees comes up is because we actually have quite a few more than other peer cities. So peer cities having an average around 30 committees. And at the time TFOGS was doing the work, it was about 102 that we had. Today we have 71, 56 of which are directly under our purview. Still more than half of the, more than almost twice the average. Next slide. So there's a number of reasons why reducing the number of BCCs will help us achieve these goals. Focusing on where we allocate staff time, Alder time, and legislative referrals. Public feedback over the course of 2024 to the Alders was very clear that folks want the city to be looking at how do we use staff time. And this is one of the areas. Clarity for residents. When tracking an issue can be confusing to know which committees to follow or attend. And it's very easy to miss a new item of potential interest for a member of the public. And also when something goes to two, three, four committees, it takes that time for an interested member of the public to then come back to each committee to have their say and to watch discussion. Can make it challenging to be deeply engaged as a member of the public with the committee system. One of the goals of this project is stronger, accountable committees. We want all the committees to be staffed to the very best level. And we want more staff capacity to be able to do things like quality assurance, training, evaluation across the system. And one thing that's important, another piece of this, committees can be an intimidating, time-consuming, and complicated form for resident engagement. And it's not the only, it shouldn't be the only way that the public can deeply engage on city business and on issues. And so another benefit to cutting or reducing the overall number of committees is to help Alders get out in the community more, to be able to directly engage their districts. It's something that we're working on in other areas as well. Next slide. So we did a number of analyses. TFOGS had already done quite a bit of work. We also looked at a lot of, we sorted things a number of different ways, looking at the ordinances, looking at the committee missions, looking at the duties, talking to Alders, asking them to give us ideas about how they think about their committees, their past committees, their current committees, because Alders, of course, sit on many committees. And so they have a bit of a different perspective than any one individual. We also got agency input on how how they might conceptualize the committees that they support and what they need. And and we also looked at the performance data on individual BCCs. Next slide. All right, Christy, back to you.
All right, thank you. So as we've done this, we've been making a number of changes along the way. This work has been kind of coming in stages and waves, and there have been points where people identified changes they wanted to make and kind of said, can we move on those now rather than trying to do everything as one large package? So some of those have been being moved on and happening in tandem with the analysis that Karen just mentioned, such that I don't need to read you the entire slide, but we combined a number of sustainability and environmental committees. We combined two transportation committees into one. We combined different housing committees, and so on. And then right now, we are at a point where we're recommending a couple of new stages of work in 2025, some for this first quarter, and then some that would follow later in the year. And here's a summary of all that we're proposing right now. This is changes to about 14 committees. And I think relevant to us is more the middle column, that there are some committees that we have proposed to dissolve, and it's not happy news, I know that, but I'm here to tell you that we made that recommendation for PSRC, and I can explain why, and then we'd like to have some dialogue. Ultimately, what it came down to largely was overlap in scope. This, I think there were other things brought up as occasional occurrences, or like sometimes there may have been quorum issues or other issues, but I know you've recently gone to a system of every other month meetings instead of every meeting. So I want to be clear that that wasn't really a driver. What it really came down to is we see that the Common Council's approach with public safety has generally put it into forums that overlap with PSRCs. So for one, when it comes to big policy decisions on public safety, the Common Council, both the current membership and previous memberships, have shown they have a preference for taking that on either themselves, just as you receive public safety reports on your meetings, they receive them on theirs. They don't do that with all agencies, but they do that with public safety. That's something they've decided they would like to do. And then they, if there's a big policy issue they're grappling with, they have formed task forces or ad hoc, such as with the body-worn cameras. Another major role of PSRC is oversight of public safety budgets, whether it's looking at the budget itself at budget time or looking at contracts and spending related to that. That's different than most committees. Most committees aren't charged with that focus. And additionally, our finance committee is charged with that focus. It's charged with that focus across all agencies. And so going back through agendas and looking at Legistar items, we could see that items that come here then also go to finance. So that is a step that's happening in two different committees. So ultimately, we flagged this because of the overlap in scope with other committees. There's certainly multiple ways to configure this, but this was the thing that we flagged and the proposal that we started with. I guess I'll just add that we know this is a difficult conversation. These committees exist because they're bodies of work we value. If they weren't, we never would have started this. And I think, frankly, that's one of the reasons this project and getting to this point has taken years. Because it's one thing to say, yes, we should have a smaller committee system. And it's a whole different thing to say, okay, so where do you want to make changes? So I just want to reemphasize that this is more of it's not an intent to devalue the work. It's intended to be a shift in how we do the work. So I know this is, this is a difficult conversation, and I just want to acknowledge that. So that's our explanation, but we really wanted to be here in dialogue with you. We're happy to take feedback, input, anything you'd like to share with us, we can take back. It can help shape or amend proposals. But we also recognize that, one of the points of tension that's come up in these is the question I have on the screen is not a question of if yay or nay, although we can talk about that as much as you'd like to. It's a question of how. If this were to happen, what would be important to capture in the shift? And that is because, you know, the question that the council is going to have to grapple with is how many committees should we have? And what changes to our structure do we need to make to achieve that? And there's no single committee that's in a position to answer that question. And so it's a difficult one to ask of any committee. And so we're trying to ask more about your work. We're trying to ask more about, if this work were to happen in a different way, what do you think is most important about it? What would you want to most uplift about it? Are there skill sets? Are there points of view? Are there particular topics amongst the topics you look at that you think are really the priorities? Are there other things you want to put on the table? So it's kind of a teeing off point, but we're happy to answer questions and take any input and feedback you'd like to share.
Alder Knox, you had a question? Can't hear you.
You're muted.
No, I thought you were ready for feedback.
I am.
Okay. Chair, am I okay too?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks. First of all, I want to say to you guys, I recognize the humongous effort in time that you put into trying to corral all these 100 or so committees. And I definitely recognize that, because I think there's really is a need to eliminate some of the redundancies we have and be more efficient with some of these longstanding committees. But I did wanna, and I'm sure as you know, I think it's really important to know that some of these committees allow public access and participation from our citizens in ways that they otherwise would not have. I mean, it's one thing to come to meetings and have your, as I call it, 3 minutes of fame, but that's very different than sitting on a committee where you bring in your expertise and actually having the opportunity to participate in government as a citizen. So, I'm sure you guys understand the significance of that. Over the years, I've served on many committees and commissions and learned a lot of things in the process that really served me well. And also, in some cases, I was able to bring some of my work expertise to those committees too. And so I've served on countless of city, county, civic committees over the years. And those experiences, I would say, is invaluable to me even today. So just want to point out a few of those obvious things. I guess if I can get to the actual, you know, recommendations that you had for eliminating this committee. I guess first thing, you know, I've been on this committee for 2 years, and I don't think we've had any real quorum problems since we've been on here. You know, it might have took us early traction, but I understand the past. They've had some significant ones, but I think we've been pretty regular on time with this committee. And I really think that this committee, where it tends to overlap some other committees, I really think the question is which committees should remain and which should not. I see you put the PCOB on here. My question is, are they slated for elimination?
They are not. And actually, I realized, I know I had that in the memo, and I realized upon reflection and some questions and comments to me that that was, I guess that was misconstrued. That was maybe something that's more of an acknowledgement of a period. There was a period of time when PCOB was getting started that they were trying to get up to speed and they were asking for briefings on things that were similar to what PSRC is asking for briefings on. Now, that was A, point in time, and B, because that committee was asking, which had nothing to do with this committee's purview. Mm-hmm. So I had flagged that as something that we learned through the process, and I realized afterwards that just it suggested it was an area of emphasis and like a cause of this, and that was not intended and not correct. Okay. So I took that off of the slide, and I regret having that in the memo.
Okay. Well, my point is where they obviously have oversight over the police department, and we have interest in not only policies with the police department, the fire department as well. I think there are opportunities for broader areas of safety issues that this committee could be responding to. And I think early on, I believe some of us auditors talked about the fact that one of the things that our job is to do is when these issues come up to refer them to the relevant commissions so they can have that input, not only from the citizens, but maybe can gain some other expertise from the people that's on that committee. So, and then I guess my only other little commentary about the PCOB, since I served on it for 2 years, if any committee probably would be looked at as being eliminated, I would probably opt for that one because they've been very ineffective over those 2 years. I have to accept responsibility personally for that because I was on that committee and I know some of the difficulties and pitfalls that committee experienced. To its credit, it was new. And I think even the way that it originally was constructed, in my opinion, was problematic. And I'm not going to go down that road because that's not our focus right here on this particular committee. So that was just one thing that I thought was, you know, caught my attention. But I really think this committee could look at other broad areas, and maybe they do overlap, but still it's good to have, we might have a different perspective. Like, for example, you mentioned the Board of Health and Violence Prevention. And I think they're doing a good job driving their agenda, but I don't think it's problematic for this committee to look at the impact that some of those proposals have on the city of Madison as a whole, and even on particular communities or neighborhoods. I don't think that's necessarily always problematic. And so I'm really not in favor of eliminating this commission. And your total proposal, I have some other commissions that I don't agree with too. But that's kind of why we're in this process. And I really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to those individuals on those different committees to get our feedback. I don't know how to address that totally, that last question about if so, what will we want to move forward? I think I'm going to have to think about that a little more before I can give you an intelligent response to that. But thank you for the opportunity. And I probably will get other opportunities too.
Thank you, Alder Knox. Any other questions or comments, concerns? I guess as a chair, my question would be, if you're talking about dissolving this, how soon will that happen?
Yeah. So the proposal right now, I have sorry, I didn't go to that last slide. We have a legislative proposal. It's proposed to go to the Common Council Executive Committee on February 25th. They're the committee that we've been, as Karen said, working with most recently to get to this point. And their recommendation would go back to the Common Council, and action there is anticipated for March 11th. So that's the current schedule.
Okay. I will say at first I was reluctant on getting on board with this, and then came in and was able to assimilate and I think bring some energy to the table, and then became a co-chair. But what I like about the PSRC is, and those on the line, please help me out. I think the chemistry and the energy, the synergy is fantabulous. I think we are all of a very educated background and educated knowledge of business and policies and social issues. And I think it's a well-oiled machine. Having said that, that's why I would just question motive to get rid of something that is well-oiled or without even trying to task us to do something on a higher level and utilize us in other spaces. I guess, I mean, being a former athlete, you know, I always go back to the Chicago Bulls. You know, why get rid of what you got when you won 6 championships?
And I think this is really the question that I think the council will have to grapple with. And as we mentioned, they have decided, they seemingly, and I put this question to them when we brought this up, they seem to want to take on public safety as a body of a whole, as a body of the whole. And I get, and so I think when this goes back to them, that could be a question grappled with. It seemed compelling enough to them that they wanted us to explore this. They didn't tell us to take it off the table. And so I think there's that, I take that to mean there's a recommendation that that is a role that they like to play and don't expect to step back from. And then the recognition that the funding and financing things all, you know, have a kind of a dual role with finance. So I think, to be honest, there's not a single committee on here that isn't doing work that the city values. So we put hard questions in front of them. So I guess I'll just leave it at that and try not to further put words into anybody's mouth. But ultimately, those when they're voting on March 11th, that's probably going to be informing how they're balancing things.
Alder Knox.
Sometimes we do want to deal with issues as a body of a whole, but I think one of the things we really need to realize is this committee and a lot of other committees, we get expertise that some of us on the council do not have. And I think it's important that we allow citizens to have actual participation in their government. And we can't, as alders, take everything away from those citizens and believing that we can figure all those things out ourselves when we have the benefit of committees that can go through these things even before it comes back to us and inform us and educate us. And I that's one of the things I call it democracy. You know, it's not, you know, that's allowing people to participate. It's what we call that participatory government. Isn't that what we used to call it way back when? I think that's what we used to call it. And I think that's important. I really do. So some committees, I guess it's just going to come down to which committees, but I think that's the issue we really need to talk about. Are there some committees that really, because of how it impacts the public, how it impacts the average citizen, maybe it should remain the way they are. So That's all I'm saying. We don't know how this is going to shake out in the end, but just wanted to make that point. Yeah, some issues are very important, and we are going to, you know, kind of battle it out at our level, but that still doesn't mean we don't need those citizens' expertise. I value a lot of citizens' input on a lot of issues that come before us.
Thank you, Alder Knox. Any other comments, questions, concerns? Anybody want to speak? Thank you. Moving on to item number 8, report from the Alders. Any Alders have anything you want to report at this time?
One of the things, I know it's been out in the public, but we are having some housing changes that we are trying to start moving through. It's coming before Plan Commission on this coming Monday to have conversations that just around increasing the ability to build affordable housing, around changing some of the zoning ordinances. So that's something definitely to be watching and monitoring as it goes through the different committees before it comes back to council.
Thank you. Anybody, any comments to Alder Duncan? Thanks for sharing that, sir. Any other comments, questions, concerns? Report from the chair. It's always an honor and a pleasure working with everybody here. I just don't believe in removing something. I understand trimming some of the committees, because I know there's a lot of committees that has to report into the Common Council, the mayor, or whatever, but I just think that we have become a very well-oiled machine. And I think if we were tasked to do a little more, everybody on this line is value-added and can provide ideas, feedback, solutions to help the city of Madison be a better place. So that's my thoughts. For me, for any future items that anybody want to list, possibly for our next meeting. Seeing none, can I get a motion for, Lynn, go ahead.
Yeah, if we have a future meeting, I mean, I started with this. I'd like to know the impact, like the funding of DEI for the fire department and the police department, if there's any federal funds, and how the removal of those funds might impact the budget and what the initiatives are for DEI in those two in the city of Madison. I know it's a citywide effort that I learned from our John Haas, but that I would like to know how that impacts fire and police if federal funds are removed.
And Andrea can make a note of that. Thank you. Any other comments for future agenda items? Go ahead, Alder Knox.
Yeah, I I'm not sure. You know, we already had our pilot regarding the body-worn cameras. I'm not sure if this committee has had a chance to review it and you know, comment. Maybe that's something that can come before us from the police department and talk about the results of that, because that will be an issue that will be coming up at some point, you know, to the main body of the council. Is that germane?
Andrea, can you add that to the notes?
Yep.
Thank you.
Are there any other future agenda items? If not, can I get a motion for adjournment? Alder Fields, Thank you. And Alder Knox has a second. Meeting is adjourned. Everybody be safe if you're driving out here. I'm leaving the Follett heading west. Have a good weekend.